You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. At CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. The entirety of that intro was by the all-Native American rock group Redbone and their 1974 hit single, Come and Get Your Love. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in to what I'm affectionately calling Season 2, Episode 1 of Unceded Airwaves. This show is put together every week by UBC's Indigenous Radio Collective. The team is comprised of both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people who are passionate about radio, alternative media, and Indigenous topics and issues. And we are very committed to centering the voices of Native people and offering alternative narratives that empower Native people and their stories. But we do recognize that media has been used as a tool to subordinate or appropriate Native voices, and we are committed to not replicating these dynamics. So each episode, we're going to talk about Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment, and feature upcoming events in the community. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show. So today on Unceded Airwaves, we'll be talking about consent culture on campus. In light of the most recent attack on campus, I've asked Sarah Hunt, an assistant professor of the First Nations and Indigenous Studies Program and Department of Geography here at UBC, as well as Lucia Lorenzi, who identifies as a biracial settler of Afro-Caribbean and European descent. And she's also a recent UBC PhD graduate in English literature. And I've asked both of these women to come on the show because they have both been working very hard to contribute to sexual assault policy, which we will discuss a little bit later on in the show. My name is Lisa Gerbov. As I mentioned, I'm a Tsimshian person from the Northwest Coast. I am here studying at UBC myself, and I'm going to be on quite a few of these upcoming episodes of the Unceded Airwaves. I am the collective coordinator this year, and so if you're interested in getting involved with the collective, I encourage you to reach out and get involved and make some radio with us. But collectively, as the Indigenous collective, we wanted to start off the season in a good way by focusing on the territory for which we broadcast from. And since I'm not from here, I thought the best idea would be to reach out to the Musqueam Band Office. So here I had the opportunity to speak with Larry Grant this morning at the band office. I'm speaking with Larry Grant, an elder in residence at the First Nations House of Learning at UBC, a resident elder at the Justice Institute of BC, and a language and culture consultant at the Musqueam Band. We're at the Musqueam Band Office in Vancouver. And I would just like to thank you for chatting with me, Larry. I really appreciate you making the time for Unceded Airwaves. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to start off the season by talking a bit about what it means to be here on Musqueam territory. Are you able to tell us a bit about the Musqueam territory?
When you say the Musqueam territory, it in pre-contact times, it encompassed an area from Point Grey across to North Shore, up partway up Howe Sound to Harvey Creek, through the mountains, down Indian River, down through Indian Arm, reaching Deep Cove area, up to Port Moody, Kwikwetlem, Gatesy, and then up to Kwantlen, which is Fort Langley, and then back down the south arm of the Fraser River to Stillwater and back to the point. That is by the Musqueam Declarations developed in the 1970s by our elders is our primary use area. So when you say, what is it like to be in Musqueam territory, it's not just this little area in UBC or here at Musqueam. It's all of Metro Vancouver or the Greater Vancouver Regional District. So it's good to be on this land, but it's also sad because these lands are unceded lands. And by saying unceded, we mean that it's land that has never been lost in battle, never been given away, never been sold, never been traded. And there is no agreement with the British Canadian colonial government for occupation of it. It's basically occupied lands by Britain originally. And it's like any other displaced person in the world. We are displaced people on our own lands. Mm-hmm. And that is a concept that is quite challenging to accept for people that come from war-torn countries suffering from the displacement of their homes and families from their lands to come to Canada, and especially on the West Coast. The province of British Columbia is about over 90% unceded lands, and the new immigrants or refugees, they are not aware of all of this and assume that Indigenous peoples get their land for free, and yet it's the reverse. It's the British Canadian colonial government that got their land for free, actually occupied all of the lands that the Indigenous peoples of Canada occupied and just arbitrarily pushed the people out of their territory so that they could acquire the assets that they could see within the territories. So that's the sad part. So, and the good part is we're still here. We are a people that have lived on this land while the Delta was being formed after the last ice age around 10,000 years ago. Some people say 9, but they are not able to confirm 9 or 10,000 years, so it's easier for me to say 10,000 years. And we kept moving along from the mouth of the river as it was being formed. And 6,000 years ago, we were up approximately where the Alec Fraser Bridge is. And then we have occupied this community, the Musqueam Molly community, continuously for 4,000 years. So that is the good part, is that we're still here and we're still struggling very much as our ancestors did at the time of Confederation, at colonialism, when they developed all of those repressive acts. Like the Indian Act, Indian Residential School Act, the Fisheries Act, the Wildlife Act, the Potlatch Ban. It's something that we have endured and persevered to struggle from that time of welcoming the people that came here, the homeless people that came here, the homeless boat people that came here from Britain and throughout the British Empire at that time, the British colonial empire. So it's something to see that happen. And But it's been a good, it's a good place to live. It's a wonderful place to live. We do have a fairly democratic system that we live in, but Britain and Canada and the colonial government system does not want to come to terms with its appropriation of indigenous lands of British Columbia. So it, that's a little sad part. So that Canada, as one of the leading nations, seen as a leading nation in the defense of human rights violations, has not been able to come to terms with its own human rights violations within Canada. So it's that's the other part that's a challenge. So, and it's something that I think that people think, the settlers think, that indigenous people have a good life, a free life, but it they have not been made aware of all of those repressive acts that I had mentioned. And if we are to have reconciliation and healing, both sides of the reconciliation process, like Britain, Canada, and the colonial government, and the indigenous people, need to be aware of all of those repressive acts that that we need to work through in dialogue to understand each other's position in this world as human beings.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I think what deters a lot of people from learning about the Musqueam or the Tsleil-Waututh or the Squamish or the Katsi or whoever's territory they're on is that for some reason we're almost waiting for an invitation to be invited in. I reached out to the Musqueam Band Protocol Office for this radio show, and I'm really thankful that I did, but obviously we're not entitled to an invitation. So I was kind of wondering what advice you might have for people who are wanting to make connections with the Musqueam community in a meaningful way.
The first thing I believe is recognizing the Musqueam children in the school systems. We have our children in kindergarten right up to the post-secondary level to recognize that they are a Musqueam people. But also, as you have done, you've reached out to our protocol office. We do have an exhibit called Tsnam, along with the Museum of Vancouver, which gives an exemplary exhibit here at Musqueam and UBC that you could always come down and by calling the band office at Musqueam and making arrangements with Mary Point, the facilities manager. She can facilitate a guided tour of the museum, our little gallery that we have. And also there are creek tours, ecological tours within the reserve boundaries that is actually quite informative of the geographical, ethnobotany of the community. And that's a first step. After that, it's making a relationship with someone in certain areas by talking to different department heads, like our treaty department or our education department, that could facilitate different, and our youth, our recreation program. We have quite a recreation program, and the youth coordinators in there, they're approachable, but there's all kinds of outreach work that's done from UBC, like the Bridge Through Sports program, the Musqueam 101, which is very much like a Humanities 101 night. It's an Wednesday evenings from 6 to 9, and it's open to anyone to come down to Musqueam and listen to the issues that are being presented in research papers, very, very much. There's a large number of guest speakers that are willing to come down that work with Indigenous issues and all the different successes that Indigenous peoples have had and the challenges that Indigenous peoples have had in a very, very open discussion style of presentation. That's the first step. And then on Aboriginal Day, normally our community has Aboriginal Day is open, and we have the different departments have little booths like the language and the education, the treaty department. I'm not sure if the taxation department has it, but that's something that can be a part of one day of your life to come down here and mingle with Indigenous people of Musqueam. It's quite an experience. It's a friendly atmosphere. It's not a challenging atmosphere. Everyone is here to learn more about about each other and about our own selves. But it's another step. So that, and I don't know what else there is other than creating a relationship. So coming down and mingling with people that come from here, you're able to make a connection and probably be able to help through that. But before you come down to help, you need to create that relationship first, because there's many, many generations of mistrust of non-Indigenous peoples that want to know about us or want to know how we can work together. So until that relationship allows that trust to grow, then that's the part that's important.
I'm speaking with Larry Grant, who is an elder in residence at the First Nations House of Learning at UBC, and we're at the Musqueam Band office. And I just wanted to thank you for chatting with me today. At Unceded Airwaves, we're always trying to practice decolonization. We recognize that radio as a medium has been used for oppressive reasons. It hasn't given a lot of opportunity for self-representation for First Nations people. So what we're striving to do is to represent ourselves and our communities from wherever we're from. And so it was really important for us to get a few words from you about the Musqueam territory and about what it means to be in someone else's territory. So I just really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you. It was good to be asked these questions, to be able to give answers that I think are a bit meaningful. I know they're meaningful to me, but they may not be as meaningful to other people.
But they're very important questions.
They are. Yeah. And the other thing that I would like to add, when you say decolonialization, I find that that's a real challenging term. When you really look at how colonialism started, how it began, it begins with UK, with Britain, the crown heads of Europe, colonizing people that are not considered as educated, as sophisticated, as learned as the British crowned heads and the European crowned heads. So we live in a hierarchical society. So if we are going to decolonize, we have to take apart and understand where this thing comes from about superiority between human beings from different countries and different social structure, that decolonization is an impossible word in my mind. It's more about understanding indigenous ways of knowing and indigenous ways of learning, that and indigenous ways of cultural, spiritual, ceremonial activity needs to be understood better. So until we can sort that out, that word decolonization is a misnomer, I believe. So it's not simple to deconstruct to the point where we view each other as equal human beings and not one supreme commander designation that we see today, practiced today.
So could you see Unseated Airwaves, the radio show, as being a part of deconstructing what colonization is and maybe understanding Indigenous peoples better for a wider audience, maybe Indigenous and non-Indigenous people?
Yeah, I believe that Unseated Airwaves, and along with another station downtown that does work like this.
Is that Co-op Radio?
I think it's down there on Alexander Street.
Oh, Roundhouse Radio.
Roundhouse Radio, yeah. No, I believe stations like this, Unseated Airwaves, Roundhouse Radios, Co-op Radio, are doing a good job in the sense of helping the people that want to know about colonization, the effects of colonization, and how do we move away from that concept of colonization. The Airways reaches a fairly large audience. Social media probably reaches more now. But for people that listen to radio, there's a wide audience. And if it's done in a non-argumentative way, more of a dialogue, it will, in my mind, it will work in assisting people to have a better grasp of the challenges of First Nations people living in the British Empire, not just Canada, but all the colonies in the British Empire. I think you're doing a good job.
Thank you. Yeah. We're just starting. We got a long ways to go. Mm-hmm. I know that you're a language and culture consultant here at the Musqueam Band. I know I didn't ask you this before to prep anything, but do you have a word that you might be able to teach us?
Qualtl. To forget our differences and become friends again. Could be used for peace or reconciliation, so that two peoples that have differences, whether they are conscious of the differences or not, that's a to come back together and be friends. It's the linguists call it Hulkamelum. The Musqueam call our dialect Hunkaminum, and the dialect on Vancouver Island is Hulkaminum.
Hulkaminum, Hulkamelum.
And Hunkaminum.
Hunkaminum.
Yeah, three major dialects.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I really appreciate chatting with you today at the Musqueam Band office.
Now that was Larry Grant, Elder in Residence at UBC's First Nations House of Learning. He's the resident elder at the Justice Institute of BC, and he's the language and culture consultant for the Musqueam Band in Vancouver. Next up, I want to give you, the listener, a trigger warning as we're going to be talking about sensitive content. Coming up, I'll be talking with Sarah Hunt, and we'll have Lucia Lorenzi on the phone to talk about a recent attack on campus and how we can move towards consent culture on campus. But before we get chatting with our next guests, first, I wanted to play a song from David Moore, and this artist identifies on his website as being of Métis Native American descent and is a Vancouver-based musician. He released his debut album, Every Color, last year, where he mixes Motown, soul, and hip-hop. And he's actually nominated for Aboriginal Artist of the Year at the Breakout West 2016 Western Canadian Music Awards, which starts tomorrow in Regina, Saskatchewan. So he's also nominated for the Urban Artist of the Year. And so I wanted to play this song for you. This is David Morin, Come Home, from the album Every Color.
Leisure and Sunny Chen of Sad China present Objet d'Arc, an evening of art and music aimed to empower women and femme-identifying individuals in our community. Objet d'Arc features artwork by female artists including photographers Amique Fallaud, multidisciplinary artist Mickey Aurora, and emerging artists like Kyla James, Simone Sylvan, and DJ Rachel Fay. Tickets are $5 at the door this Thursday, October 13th, at Vancouver Art and Leisure. Did you know you're an ocean
girl? You heard David Morin, who is a Métis Native American Indigenous person from Vancouver, and you heard his song, Come Home from his new album, Every Color. David Morin is actually nominated in the 2016 Western Canadian Music Awards for Aboriginal Artist of the Year and Urban Artist of the Year. This is Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. So I just wanted to give you a trigger warning as we're going to be talking about some sensitive content, and we will be discussing a recent attack on the UBC campus and gender-based violence more broadly with Sarah Hunt and Lucia Lorenzi. So if you are sensitive to this subject matter, please change your dial right now and come back at 2 o'clock. So I just wanted to introduce my guests. I am joined in the studio today by Sarah Hunt, who's an assistant professor in the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program and the Department of Geography. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. And on the phone, we also have Lucia Lorenzi, who is a biracial settler of Afro-Caribbean and European descent, and she lives and works on the unceded Coast Salish territories. How are you, Lucia?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show. So first, to start off, maybe if I could get you to introduce yourself, Sarah, and just tell us a bit about your background.
Sure. Well, I'm Quagil from the Kwakiwak Nation from Tsahi, so what's now called Fort Rupert on the northern part of Vancouver Island. I'm also of Ukrainian and English ancestry on my mom's side, and I grew up on the Kwangan territories in Victoria, BC. I just moved here last year where I started the position with First Nations and Indigenous Studies. I grew up, as I said, mostly in Victoria, and started doing work around these issues of violence and law, questions of justice in our communities when I was a teenager. And actually, when I was in my second year of my undergrad, is when I really started to think about these issues in my own family and in my own life, and have been doing that work mostly through community partnerships, a lot with Indigenous youth around the province, and now more across Canada, and thinking about issues of kind of everyday violence, but also of specifically the ways that institutions and governments perpetuate violence, and also ways that that's resisted in our daily life.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming on the show. We're really grateful to
Thanks
have you on
me.
On our first episode of our second season. Mm-hmm. Lucia, would you be able to give us a little bit of background about a bit of your experience in UBC and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. So I came to UBC in 2010, and in 2013, when the rape chants and the anti-Indigenous chants came out, I started writing publicly about these issues and really just trying to focus my attention towards what responsibilities we have within our university community to fight not only sort of the violence that's built into the institution, but the violence that's in our larger culture. So for the past 2 years, I've been writing and speaking a lot, and my dissertation also focused on how we represent sexual violence. So my work isn't so much necessarily in things like policy, but more in questions of representation and how representations of violence can also be violent in and of themselves and how we can work against that.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you so much. Well, we really appreciate you being on the show as well today. And thank you for allowing us to call you, especially because this issue is very important to not only our unceded airwaves listeners, but I feel to a broader audience as well. Mm-hmm. And so kind of what spurred this topic for the Indigenous Collective and Unceded Airwaves was there was recently an attack that had happened on campus. Mm-hmm. It was a bit difficult to find the information about it. We got an email from the president, kind of a mass email that didn't really give too many details. And just kind of we were able to piece it together from here and there. I don't know if you would be able to maybe just give us a brief overview of what may have happened with the assault that had happened on campus recently, Sarah?
Sure. Well, I guess two things. One is that what you're saying in terms of the lack of information or the way that information is put out, that's something I think that both Lucia and I don't want to speak for you, Lucia, but that we're concerned about. And certainly the panel that we were both a part of that put out this report about sexual assault on campus, which came out in the summer, but actually was only made public recently. That was something we heard over and over again in our consultations, was about how is information shared, and how it's framed really shapes how, you know, if people's level of fear on campus, the way that we can practically be safe, take measures to be safe, when the information is being filtered. So from my understanding, and Lucia, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, there was a violent attack in residence towards a young woman or a woman who lived there, a resident, by a male resident. And it involved a weapon. It was very scary. And that people who lived there intervened, and there were lots of people who kind of stepped in. And as a result, that person was arrested and charged. I think that the way that it was put out in the media, and to the university public was, or population, was concerning for lots of reasons, but including it took quite a long time for information to come out. But also that it was, you know, I think the work that we've been doing for a long time, in our own ways on campus and off, is thinking about how these individual incidents get seen as just an isolated thing, when in fact there's a long history of different kinds of violence that, you know, we need to take seriously in terms of connecting the issue of sexual violence, which is a big topic right now nationally and internationally on campuses, but how we then in our everyday lives can think about safety and wellness when this is happening and we're not sure how much information we're receiving and how accurate it is. So I don't know, Lucia, if you want to say anything more?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what's really interesting is that one of the things that came up when the media reports were coming about the assault was that the RCMP had said that because the suspect had been apprehended, that there was no risk to the community, and that student services, who made the initial call to only inform, I think, a select group of residents about the assault, had decided that they were going to inform the people who they deemed to be most affected by this incident of violence. And it was interesting to me that violence is considered not like that, the impacts of violence in our community, when we have students who might be in residence, friends who might be in residence, but that's not really considered a risk to the community. So we don't really acknowledge how news of violence and the fear of violence really traumatizes our community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I just wanted to maybe bring attention back to the university sexual assault panel that you two were both a part of.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there were six of you on this panel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you put out a report earlier this summer, but the university released their policy before the report was submitted to them. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so both of the panels were formed at the same time, but then just the timing, ours was... the policy was formed before the report. So they did extend the consultation phase. So for everybody who's listening, you have until the end of the month to provide feedback on that policy. It's important, I think, the policy is just one piece of the picture. I think certainly our report, and which is actually available on the First Nations and Indigenous Studies website. We've posted it there to make sure it's accessible for people. But we... you know, that's part of larger institutional accountability and just the changing the general culture on campus that we have when it comes to thinking about violence and safety in our everyday kinds of interactions on campus. But that policy is important because if sexual violence does happen, there's certain mechanisms that are in place that are kind of legal channels, or I mean they're not exactly legal in that you can pursue you know, through the police if you want to make that kind of complaint. You can. This is a different kind of process, but it is a binding kind of agreement about how the university is going to respond. All universities in BC now have to have a policy in place. Most of them haven't had one. But, you know, I would encourage everybody to look at what the draft policy is and have conversations. You can provide input on that, because it really affects all of us. And the policies, I think, say a lot about how this issue is treated as well. So how seriously it's treated. Then there's been lots of discussion in the last, many years, but especially the last year about ways that people have sought support when they've, you know, reported or disclosed violence that's happened. And then the real lack of feeling like it's not taken seriously. So I think we're all invested in trying to see those channels improved drastically. Yeah.
Lucia, do you have anything to add on that note?
Yeah, I think that what's interesting with the provincial legislation coming out around, or that has come out around, mandating that colleges and universities develop a policy is I think that at least in some ways the public conversation has turned towards really focusing the attention on the policy, which as Sarah mentioned is only one part, although an integral part of what's needed to be able to change cultures of violence at universities. And I think it's interesting, and I hope that the discussions of the other elements of our report, which is about institutional accountability and about a larger shift in culture, are discussed. Even though I realize now some of the attention is being taken up by the policy simply because they're on a deadline, and that's urgent. But how do we extend that conversation and move past these very, you know, bureaucratic sort of legislative models of dealing with violence towards how we are accountable to each other as community members?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you think that this report or new policy is going to have any effect on culture around campus, more specifically around consent culture? Do you think it will have a positive impact, or do you think that other steps are necessary?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's sort of two aspects. That the policy itself, I think, signals to the larger community that there are measures in place. But then what happens, are, you know, perpetrators being given appropriate punishments? So is the policy actually being used properly? So I think what's going to be needed is to see whether or not, a year down the line, 2 or 3 years down the line, is the policy being used in an appropriate measure? Because we know that policy can be a form of deterrent, it can be a form of punishment. But I think that there's a lot farther to go in terms of conversations around consent. And part of that is really, I think, decolonizing our approach to discussions of rape culture and consent and moving it away from this very highly individualized thing of individual victims and individual perpetrators towards a more collective understanding of how violence circulates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think just picking up on what Lucia said about decolonization, I think part of the, for me, I think about, it's interesting to me that this conversation about sexual violence is happening at the same time as we're thinking about, there's this national discourse around reconciliation in Canada, and specifically on campus as we're building the Indian Residential School Dialogue, History and Dialogue Center. So thinking about universities' roles in changing the way that Indigenous people and settler colonial histories and present-day realities are represented, these are often imagined as very separate, and we don't really think about, you know, the ways that, for one, the foundational lack of consent, as we're here on unceded lands, we just heard Larry Grant talking about that. What that actually means is that this not just this university, but that, you know, we're all here with, there's a lack of consent in, foundationally in kinds of the, in the way that this place came into being. There are certainly more recent agreements specifically here between Musqueam and UBC, formal arrangements to recognize the need to gain consent from Musqueam. So there's those kinds of official relationships, which is great. But it's also important to think about within the history of dispossession and especially residential schools, that sexual violence and different kinds of violence were enacted there. Certainly people resisted that. And, you know, there's lots of stories within the TRC of people resisting, running away, you know, whenever there's violence, there's resistance to that at the same time. But then if we think about that as being disconnected from what's happening on campus today, I think we're mistaken. So it helps to make it seem like the kind of acts of violence that happen are just isolated, and they're not about a broad culture that that we have here, which is about gender relations, which is about a lot of different things. So I think that trying to have conversations that help to make visible some of the kind of invisible ways that power operates on campus is part of what needs to happen to think about what decolonization means in practice, that it's not just about land, it's about our bodies, it's about how we treat each other, it's about consent in our everyday interactions with each other. You know, how can we build our collective kind of capacity to have consensual relationships in the context of, you know, colonization, which is unconsensual. So mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of deep work we need to do to think through how we are together here. That's not just about a top-down kind of approach where policy is going to dictate how we talk to each other, but we can do that. We don't need to wait for the policy to do that kind mm-hmm. of work.
Yeah, and when I was speaking to Larry earlier, we were talking about the need for deconstructing institutions and just getting a really deeper level of understanding before we can actually face these types of issues that we want to face. And that's, thank you both for bringing it back to an Indigenous kind of perspective on this issue. It's really important that we talk about it on Unceded Airwaves and that it's not ignored in the media. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to really thank both of you for coming on the show today. But before we end our conversation, I also wanted to touch on the event that's coming up, Decolonizing Rape Culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one of the organizers, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's on Friday. Unfortunately, it's been full for quite a long time. But hopefully some people are able to come. It's intended to be a space to think about, you know, connect issues of violence and resistance to violence and consent culture on campus. Thinking about that in the context of colonization, thinking about violence on the land and how that relates to violence, kind of embodied kinds of violence, but also thinking about the ways that organizing against violence, you know, a lot of Indigenous people, especially here, in this area, have been doing really powerful anti-violence work within their families, but also publicly, you know, just broadly to bring these issues to the attention of the public, to national attention, international. And that resistance has been really significant in terms of the way that we understand how, you know, for example, the issue of missing and murdered women in Canada and internationally as well. And so thinking about how do our conversations here connect with that broader anti-violence kind of movement, and how can we respect and hold up that work and that leadership in our local communities. But we're also thinking about different ways that not just universities, but mental health systems, the legal system, all of those systems, how they can sometimes create harm when people seek support for violence, but also how strategically people are trying to change those systems from within. So we have a panel of Indigenous people providing their expertise.
Excellent. Well, it's sure to be a great event if it's mm-hmm. already full up. I mean,
unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, but fortunately that you're getting the word out to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking with Sarah Hunt, an assistant professor in the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program and the Department of Geography here at UBC, as well as Lucia Lorenzi, who is a UBC PhD graduate in English literature. And both of these women have been working very hard to contribute to the sexual assault policy at the University of British Columbia. Thank you both for being on the show. Lucia.
Thank you so much.
And Sarah, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. I wanted to play a song for you, another artist, William Prince, not to be confused with Prince William, is a singer-songwriter from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and I love the bio on his website. It says, William Prince is a storytelling singer-songwriter from the Peguis First Nation who sidesteps cliches to provoke thought and facilitate discovery. He is nominated for Aboriginal Artist of the Year at Breakout West and is nominated for the Roots Solo Artist of the Year as well. This is William Prince with Earthly Days.
kids here, go on and flip your cards over, my dear. Queen of my heart, ace of my eye. Covered in grace, cause you worked in a diner. Kind to every son and daughter. Girl, I swear this been coming for a long, long time. And any bed is a queen when there's one laying in it. All great things had their beginnings. Feel it in your gaze, you're just looking for some peace of mind. Took us 6 years and 4 days to finally get married. Look at me, getting all carried away. From our fears is where we will tarry on. And I swear you could show me the light. Bring me back to Jesus Christ. Cause I want more than just these earthly days. You can have all my earthly days. Go ahead and take all.
About time, the UBC hockey season opener. Tune in this week as your defending Canada West women's hockey champions take on the Saskatchewan Huskies. Listen live on CITR 101.9 FM this Friday at 7 p.m. or online at CITR.ca.
The Downtown Eastside Women's Art Collective facilitates bi-weekly art workshops for self-identified women out of the Carnegie Community Center Art Room. It is launching its second zine on October 13th. Come to Untitled Art Space for a community celebration, art show, and sneak peek of the zine made by self-identified women in the Downtown Eastside.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9, broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. You heard William Prince from the Pegwiss First Nation, who is nominated for Aboriginal Artist of the Year and the Roots Solo Artist of the Year. That was his song, Earthly Days. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and I am here in the studio with Sarah Hunt. Thank you for being with us today.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
And we were just talking about a very sensitive subject, consent culture on campus, and recent attacks that have happened as well. And so we just wanted to maybe finish off with just providing some opportunity for space for Indigenous students to be highlighted as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, in my own work, I've done work on violence, as I said, since I was a teenager, and to take a strength-based approach. So to both recognize the particular ways that Indigenous people here on campus, especially students, are impacted, not just by what happens here, but what we bring with us, whether it's the legacies of residential schools in our families or our own specific personal experiences, and how that shapes how we receive news of these kinds of attacks on campus. So I really encourage students to support each other, to be kind to each other, and to be sensitive to the fact that even when we're talking about these issues in class or reading articles, it might seem like a kind of abstract kind of topic, but for many of us, it's very personal. So, there's lots of supports on campus, including a counselor who's at the Longhouse every Thursday. And just really that, you know, sometimes being here can be challenging, not just, you know, when these kinds of attacks happen, but because of the materials that introduce topics of violence as well. So I think, in order to shift to a more kind of caring, founded approach that's founded in making it a more decolonial kind of space, that part of it is countering the violence, but also, supporting one another as we're here. So
absolutely. And just to leave us off, do you have a word that you can teach us in Kwakwaka'la?
Kwakwaka'la?
Kwakwaka'la. I've tried to write it phonetically still.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
The word I wanted, I'm not a Kwakwaka'la, I'm not fluent in my language,
This is an opportunity to practice.
Yes. I think it's pronounced Tsalayu, which is canoe bailer. And I think it's an interesting, to think about coastal concepts for how we move through the world. But a canoe bailer is somebody who is really important to getting around in a canoe. So to recognize, I think, especially with this issue, we don't all have the same role. I think we all have different roles to play. And that for some of us, it might be canoe bailers are really a part of, as water's coming in, ensuring that water gets out so that we can stay afloat, and that we all have those, different diverse roles in moving forward together. So
the word was Tsalayu. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And that means canoe bailer in Kwakwaka'la.
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 Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I've lived on the coast since January, and I should know this by now. But thank you for teaching me and our listeners this word. And thank you so much for coming into the show and being on Unceded Airwaves with us today.
Gila Kasla. Thank you.